Okay, so I'm very happy to announce the next talk, which actually is a micro panel. Let's call it a mini panel here. It's about polyamory plus technology equals sexual and romantic abundance. Okay, a big applause for Kim DeVries and Pepper Mint.
Thanks. Okay. So we'll get started.
You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Kim DeVries. This is Pepper.
Nope, that's
I'm.
Mm-hmm.
Use the microphone. Use it.
I'm Kim DeVries.
And my name's Pepper. Let me talk about myself for just a sec. I don't really have any academic authority on this subject, but I've been a poly organizer for a good 6 or 7 years now. And so that's where all my history is coming from. When Johannes moves, I can tell you that my websites are pepperminty.com and freaksexual.com. That second is my blog, and it has lots of very long writings on subjects of interest to polyamory and BDSM and bisexuality.
Okay, and I'm not going to claim academic credentials over polyamory either. I actually know very few people who would do that, but because it just hasn't received a whole lot of scholarly attention yet. But most of my research has to do with internet community and sociality, identity studies, that kind of thing. So anyway, to get started. It's been recognized for quite some time that the internet and technology more generally increasingly facilitate social connections. And people have been studying this for quite a while, going back to the days, you know, when it was just email and news groups or bulletin board systems, you know, right up through the present where we're looking at much more advanced websites like Facebook or MySpace or, you know, lots of other different kinds of websites that have evolved to help people connect. But in particular, technology has turned out to empower and facilitate connections in the polyamorous community. Let's move over. And we're going to talk about some of the technologies that have been particularly important and look in general at how technology facilitates and enables the polyamorous community, including things like online calendars and social networking sites, chat clients, microblogs, but also, I mean, some of the things are sort of obvious, some of them are less so, like the algorithms used for poly speed dating, or, you know, Google Calendar. Well, actually, if you're poly, you know exactly how Google Calendar helps, but for the rest of us. So the internet has functioned as a device to collect the non-monogamous folks into a community. I mean, polyamory has been around for quite a while. A number of people have referenced the ethical slut, and certainly it's been around longer than that. But in the last maybe 10 years or so, poly has received a lot more attention in a large part, I think, thanks to its exposure on the internet. And so now there are podcasts and internet TV series, informational websites, online communities, all kinds of things online related to polyamory. And so anyone who is even a little bit interested can go online and find a wealth of information, not just about polyamory in general, but polyamory in their geographical locale. So that really assists people in understanding that there is this thing called polyamory, a part of which they might become. And these days, polyamory has even become pretty mainstream. You can see here, even Facebook offers the option of defining yourself as being in an open relationship. And many other websites like tribe.net, which has been around for a while, or the newer FetLife, or Openly, which is sort of a local, at least started as a local San Francisco movement, have long welcomed poly-identified members and event listings. But even mainstream dating sites, for example, like OkCupid or something like that, give you the option now of listing yourself as, for example, available. Even if you are also listed as being married or in a relationship, you can list yourself as available. And you can search for people, for example, who describe themselves as poly or polyamorous.
You know, that's me. but it's sort of like real, we'll be using some real life examples of people on websites. And then there's LiveJournal, yeah. I've been on the LiveJournal polyamory community, as it's called, since like 2001, I think, so maybe 8 years now. And it's just been, y'all know LiveJournal, yeah. It mostly just operates sort of as an advice forum. People show up, oh my goodness, I have this situation, I'm trying to figure this thing out, how do I tell my partner, blah, blah, blah. What's been remarkable to me about it is just how steady it's been. It's like we get like 1 to 2 questions a day on average, you know, sometimes 0, sometimes 4. But it's just, and it just keeps coming through and people keep answering these questions. And the questions repeat. Like I start thinking about each question and it's like, oh, this one's about once a month. This one's about once every 6 months. You know, this one we see weekly, right? And so we've developed all these sort of very standard answers. And what's interesting is I'll see different people on the community giving the same standard answer at different times. Like the people who actually give advice are sort of a rotating cast, but the answers are the same. And in this way, there's this sort of body of knowledge that's been built where people will say, oh, yes, but don't explain it that way, explain it this way, or, oh, but you also need to think about this if you're in this case. And it actually gets really detailed. And in some ways, this is better than any of the poly guidebooks, because in a way, there's actually just more information there. And as this graphic illustrates, the things that go wrong also on the polyamory LJ community are also pretty consistent. And you know, there's just a lot of situations that are very common. And the fact that we've gotten to the point where we're all really snarky about the things that we see that go wrong, like, oh, all the partners are A, B, C, D, E, and F, and nobody knows what's going on by the time you get through the first 2 paragraphs of the post or something like that. Or, you know, some things that have gone horribly wrong in one particular way. We're very used to seeing that. Actually, am I next? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And and so you have this, on the one hand, you have this growing body of knowledge that's coming on, not codified, but sort of standardized in a sense. It's almost like there's a polyfac evolving on the internet. And at the same time, that knowledge is evolving, the internet is also serving to help people connect. It's helping people find partners. Because one of the hardest things, if you're in the poly community or in any sort of sexual minority, really, is finding partners sometimes. And so poly-friendly internet dating sites make it possible to find partners in the small pool of poly people where you live. And there are also, the internet serves to publicize real life events such as poly speed dating.
Okay. Yeah, I want to say some other things about the internet dating sites too. There was one for a long time called Poly Matchmaker that was actually a poly specific site. And it's not the only one. I believe there's been like 1 or 2 others that people tried to set up. There were, in one case, like a pay site. That were specific to polyamory, like you can find just poly people on these sites. But what's actually been more interesting is the way that polyamory and other types of non-monogamy, it's not just polyamory, have integrated into sort of more mainstream dating sites. Like certain ones, like you go to Yahoo Personals and you say, oh, you know, I'm looking to swing or I'm looking for a second partner or something, they will throw you off. But others like OkCupid are like, oh, sure, we'll figure it out. Here, we'll set up a status for you. And, you know, go ahead. And so, OkCupid being free, that's where a lot of poly people find dates. Even in, like, really isolated situations or really rural areas, or even if they're looking for really specific stuff. Right? Was that pretty crucial for you at one point?
Yeah. I have to say that, I live in a relatively remote area and in a relatively conservative area. And so, you know, it's not like I could go down to Well, I was going to say my local cultural events center, but there isn't one. But it's not like I could really go anywhere in my town and have a conversation with someone in which it was felt like it was even possible to say, and by the way, I'm Polly. Nor was it possible to, it's not as though there were local personal ads or a local website or something like that. But going on OkCupid, you can refine your searches geographically in various ways, and you can look for matches and et cetera. And I still ended up meeting people that were, usually about 90 to 120 minutes away by car. But still, they were in the same state. and at least it was possible to, see that there was, okay, there are other people out there. There are other people who are out there who are willing to talk to me, even though I, live out here, and eventually to meet in person. The people, there's actually often sort of an interesting overlap between real life and online life. The people that I'm involved with now, it's like I met in person and then we met on OkCupid also and realized that we had already met in person and here we are being matched up on OkCupid or, we came across each other's profiles searching for poly people. And like, we were not able to say to each other, the circumstances in which we met, we were not able to say to each other, oh yes, I'm poly too. But we found out about each other being poly on OkCupid. And so sometimes these online sites, even the mainstream ones, provide a space in which you can share that information that you otherwise might not be able to. Because, there is really still, even now, there's no Emily Post text about how you have this conversation when you meet someone. It's established that you're both poly. The online sites, mainstream or otherwise, just help people find each other. Even apart from finding dates, just finding the community to begin with, finding people with whom you might actually talk about being poly. Once you find people and you actually get involved, technology and the internet can be really crucial to facilitating the actual relationship. Lots of people use internet communication and time management technologies to ease some of the difficulties you inevitably face, I would say, while managing multiple relationships. If you have a job, if you have a family, if you have any responsibilities of any kind, and you're trying to manage multiple relationships, you run into just the challenge of time management. And so many people use online calendars and instant messengers, chat clients, voice over internet phones, Skype, in order to manage some of these challenges by making sure that, scheduling conflicts don't become too problematic or by staying in touch when you are trying to stay in touch over long distances. Sometimes, if you're living not in the same city or, have conflicting work schedules or something like that, sometimes, even if you're not that far away, it still ends up being kind of like being in a long distance relationship because you just can't see each other that often. And so a lot of these technologies can help deal with that. Do I have anything to add on that?
I do want to say that poly people are somewhat more likely to be in long distance relationships just because there's a much smaller dating pool. If you find that person from Chicago who really floats your boat, you may date them, whereas if you were in a somewhat more conventional relationship and had more options, that might be too far away. You might date someone local instead. So being able to, talk to Chicago for free is really important.
Yeah, and even things like Facebook often become important. Certainly they've become important for me in strengthening our sort of larger network of poly people. Strengthening sort of the larger community in which you might be participating. If that's sort of spread out geographically, if the poly people that you're even just friends with are spread out geographically, you stay in touch on Facebook, you exchange pictures, you share pictures on Flickr or wherever, you stay connected to each other's lives that way.
math.
Yeah, it looks like math, but arguably the spread of polyamory and the creation of the community might not have happened, or at least might not have happened so quickly without the internet. Partly because, you know, it still is a relatively small group of people spread out over a pretty large geographical area. But also because there are very few agreed on models of poly relations. I mean, there are a number of books that have been published lately. Mostly they talk about, you know, they talk about triads, they talk about networks, they talk about open marriages. But you know, there really are no set models. It's not like the monogamous community where it's like everyone kind of knows what a marriage between a man and a woman or a relationship in a couple are sort of supposed to look like. You know, there's a fairly standard notion of that. But there aren't any real standard notions of what poly relationships look like and what's okay, if there's something that's not okay. You know, there's really no guideline. And so the community helps. The existence of a community helps people try to figure out. And this is, of course, what a lot of people post about when they post to LiveJournal or to any of the other online communities. They have questions like, this is what's happening. This is what we're doing. I'm not sure if it's okay. I feel kind of insecure about it. Should I be insecure about it? I don't know. Maybe I just feel insecure. Without any agreed upon model, it's really hard to judge sometimes whether or not what's going on is okay if it doesn't feel quite comfortable. But when you're in a non-traditional kind of relationship, lots of things don't feel quite comfortable. So,
awkward.
Yeah. And so it's really hard sometimes to judge whether is it just me? Is there really a problem? You know, what's going on? And so the community helps people figure that out. And of course, the equation here, you know, the more people you have involved in a poly network or constellation or whatever you want to call it, the more complicated it gets because, you know, everyone's bringing in their issues and everyone has whatever life circumstances that might be adding into the mix. And so people are always trying to figure that out. Online poly communities help people realize that they might start talking about the fact that they're non-monogamous. It makes poly visible. Was this one of yours?
It's one of yours, but okay. I have things to say.
Okay. And this is important because particularly if you are living somewhere, when you start to realize that monogamy might not work for you, if you are living somewhere where there is not a visible local community, if you didn't grow up, you know, reading Robert Heinlein or, you know, exposed to some models of open marriage or something like that, you might not even realize that anyone else is thinking about this or doing anything like this. You know, and in that respect, it's not so different to what once might have happened for people who, you know, realized that they were not strictly heterosexual or, you know, it's not so different from people who start to realize they're into something kinky, but they don't know that anyone else cares about that or is interested in it. And you can feel really isolated. But the increasing visibility online lets people know that it's not just them, that there are other people out there who may have shared that experience or shared those feelings.
Yeah, and part of this is really crucial because I think prior to internet media, there was really no exposure. So, you know, you could read the newspaper all day long and you would not see anything about, you know, even prior to polyamory, you would not see anything about swinging. Swinging was active all the way through the 80s, right? But there was nothing in the papers. And when I say nothing, I mean almost nothing. Or the stuff that was in the papers was very much like, you know, swingers arrested and charged with blah, 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 you know. So one of the very common things that we see in polyamory forums or actually face-to-face poly organizing of any sort is this whole, like, oh my God, I didn't know anyone else was doing this effect, even today. You know, that's a weekly thing. On the maybe that's monthly on the LiveJournal poly community. But I think even today I can probably say that majority of people who are doing some kind of non-monogamy are perhaps deeply in the closet and don't know anyone else is doing it. And so as you get media out there, you get this sort of steamroller effect where people suddenly are like, oh, wait, I could do that. And I think we're going to talk about that on the next slide, about identity. Yes.
Yeah, and this is something that the internet has been good at for a long time, is giving people a space where they can try a new identity, a space that might be a little bit safer than trying to try it out in their actual physical existence. So for example, people can start talking about polyamory, they can start talking about possible arrangements in the safety of an online poly community before they actually, you know, trot it out for mom and dad, or, you know, even try it out on their actual partner. They can start talking about these ideas and getting an idea of what it would feel like to be that person, to be someone who was, you know, in an open relationship or somehow non-monogamous, and start to think about, you know, what does this mean for my life? And for many people, this is really important, because for some, depending on your circumstances, depending on your job, on your family situation, you know, it may not be safe for some time to come out as poly. I mean, if you're a teacher, if you have small children, if you live somewhere very conservative, you know, it really isn't particularly safe to identify yourself publicly as polyamorous. You know, and there have been cases where, you know, people's relationships have broken up, people have been fired, people have had, you know, child welfare called on them.
People have had to leave town.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's not so safe to be poly, but at least online you can start to explore these issues and get some support from other people, which may help you, you know, survive being closeted for a while, or help you figure out, okay, this is important enough to me that I'm going to move. You know, I'm going to go somewhere where I can be more open about this.
Yeah, I don't have much else to add to that. It's very much like a process of, yeah, and I guess it's not just learning sort of tactics and strategies, though that's very important. It's like, you know, you learn tactics about how to do the poly thing, how to get into it. You learn tactics about how to talk to people about it, and you learn like who not to talk to and stuff like that. But also just sort of letting it percolate in the head a bit. I feel like we see a lot of thinky posts. And I just wanted to mention also, we screwed up the slide here. This is www.youngmetropoly.com. you kind of can't see it up there. And what's interesting about this slide, this is a blog website of a Milwaukee activist. But she's on her blog, she's posting a new poly social networking site that's specifically poly, that's new.
Okay, so, I mean, the internet, again, lots of people will talk online, whether it's through email or in a forum or so forth, who are not very comfortable talking in person. That's a general characteristic of the internet, that people who may not be comfortable speaking in person, maybe they're just very shy, or maybe they're not comfortable about a particular topic, but they will often feel much more comfortable online, you know, that the distance of the screen provides a certain amount of safety in a number of ways. When it comes to the poly context, this can really serve people from, you know, when they're trying to come out or, you know, broach something kind of sensitive with their partner, whether it's, you know, group sex or something kinky, you know, or something else that they'd like to try. They can post about it and get some general feedback first. Or sometimes they might even just, you know, communicate with their partner about it electronically before they communicate about it face to face. You know, if someone's keeping a blog, they might post about it in their blog, knowing that their partner will read it, rather than initiating an actual face-to-face conversation. Sometimes that distance makes it easier to hold off the anxiety, or to keep someone from getting defensive, or, you know, whatever kind of normal relationship dynamics might interfere with communication. Sometimes you can get away from those when you're online. And we see here, we see an advertisement for the Kinky Salon Booty Camp, which tells you how to hold a successful sex party. And, you know, you can even use things like this to broach topics. You can send someone the invitation, you know, and let them look at it on their own and see what it is, and then you don't have to tell them. And, you know, granted, it's a little bit like your parents handing you a sex ed book rather than actually talking to you about sex, but, you know, these are difficult topics, and so, you know, anything that helps people find their way into them, in the end, it's better than not talking at all.
I would like to say some other things about Kinky Salon. Many of you probably know the Kinky Salon. It's actually a very famous San Francisco play party. And you know, this is an advertisement for something in person, and the party is in person. But a lot of the people at the party are poly. And a lot of the organizing at Kinky Salon goes on online. In fact, they started the Openly website because Tribe was sucking so bad. Because they needed an online organizing resource. They couldn't do it without it. And there's this sort of ongoing theme of, you know, the internet influencing sort of real life interactions. Like, you know, polyamory is pretty much practiced in person. You know, as if you want to say I've been successfully polyamorous, you are generally not talking about your blog posts, right? So, but at the same time, somehow all this internet stuff has been really necessary for that successful in-person practice of polyamory. And at the same time, things that happen in person then end up putting things back on the net and sort of continuing this process. And it's just actually been very interesting to watch the back and forth. You know, I mean, some people get their little triad, they go off, they live somewhere, and that's it, right? They're cool. But there's a lot more sort of like, the word I want is foment, like bubbling up of things back into the network realm, ferment,
yes.
Maybe not that either. but yeah, things move back into the net because people feel the need to bring it there. And maybe that's just because they're talking about their stuff on Facebook or what have you.
Okay, so one of the actual sort of specific implications is that, you know, there is this, there's an interaction and an interrelation between technology and polyamory or, you know, technology and sexual practices generally, so that it's not just a one-way street. It's not just that people, you know, connect online and then off they go, as Pepper was saying, that it circulates back onto the net, which then in turn, you know, provides more information, more support, more community for everybody else. And so it really becomes this kind of self-reinforcing dynamic, I would say, or a positive feedback loop. Another interesting aspect of this is just that the poly community could be a valuable case study in how the internet brings together marginalized, disparate, or stigmatized groups.
I want to say that, of course, the poly community is not the only group doing this. You know, maybe like a year ago, I had a very interesting talk with one of the founders of Aven, the sort of central asexual movement website. And that's another case where there's been a movement that basically was on the internet because the people involved were just so disparate, like so spread out, there were so few of them that they really had to get together online, and it was the internet's communication facilitation that really actually made it happen. I think if we look at the past, maybe 15 years of polyamory, well, actually, I guess 20, if you go all the way back to the alt.polyamory news board, if you look at that sort of evolution, if you wanted to go and say, you know, how do sexuality groups form on the internet? Polyamory would be a great case study because it's really got the, like, sort of bare beginnings up through, you know, people really creating websites and giving advice, and now on to like specialized forums and dating and so on. Did you have anything else you want? I want to talk about this, but if you
want
to.
Yeah, go ahead.
What we put up here is a page from the FetLife community. FetLife is a website for BDSM folks. It's basically, people call it Facebook for kinksters a lot. What's interesting about it is FetLife has groups, and the poly and kinky group is one such group on FetLife, and it's for people who are poly and kinky. So this is a subgroup of the polyamory community. I'm a moderator of this, so I get to see how many people are in the group, and at the time this was captured, that was 8,000 some. And what's interesting about this is that number, right? So there's like 8,000 people who are specific to BDSM and polyamory, so like a group within a group already, even though, you know, there's a lot of BDSM folks in the poly community. At the same time, you know, we're sort of talking smaller and smaller subsets, and yet we've got one internet forum here with 8,000 people on it. And I think this really comes into focus if you start thinking about how many polyamorous people have met in person, you know, off the internet, that in-person thing we do. I don't think there's ever been a poly-specific gathering. I don't think there's ever been a gathering of poly people that was advertised as polyamorous with more than maybe about 400 poly people there. The biggest I know of was Poly Pride in New York City last year, which I think had 300 some. I could be wrong, but in any case, I'm pretty sure we haven't broken 1,000, and we definitely are nowhere near 8,000. So there's this interesting phenomenon where most of the meeting, in a way, is actually online.
And this group on FetLife, I mean, it only started, like a year ago?
FetLife only started a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so the Poly and Kinky group, you know, is not very old, and it's got 8,000 people in it. I mean, how long ago was it was this group started?
Maybe like a year ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, unlike, say, Facebook or something like that, I mean, FetLife is a couple years old, but it's not that well known yet. I mean, there are plenty of people that have never heard of FetLife, and yet it still already has 8,000 people in this subgroup, which suggests that, you know, there actually might be a lot more people out there than previously anyone had thought who identified as poly. Which is another interesting thing about the internet is that, you know, as with many other kinds of niche groups, you start to realize that actually there are more of them, more of you, than anyone previously suspected. Okay, so this is, I mean, this is a big issue in the poly community. And this is, again, where the internet sometimes has been really helpful, because even now in the mainstream media, poly is more accepted, for example, than swinging. But it seems to have gained that acceptance because the sex is downplayed. You know, the focus is on, you know, the loving relationships. We just want to have more loving relationships. Don't get in the way of our love. Well, you know, and, you know, who's going to argue with that? But as poly becomes more visible, the sex positive attitudes become more visible. And the fact that, you know, that sex is a big part of polyamory becomes more visible. And
I guess about a year ago, I did sort of my own little media research project where I went and I looked at the non-internet media, the mainstream media that's being produced about polyamory. And I looked at, and I did a sort of a similar check on the media being produced about swinging and BDSM. And this very interesting pattern emerged. The polyamory stories were mostly human interest stories. They were like, oh, here's this queer triad in the UK. Oh, you know, here's this sort of church-going family in Alabama. Like, really, it was actually really amazing. It was all over the place. It was really good media. And I've done a lot of queer activism. I'm used to really bad media, actually. Like, I've done a lot of bisexual activism, and I'm used to, you know, the New York Times saying that bisexuals don't exist and that kind of crazy bullshit. And so it was kind of surprising to me that I was like, sort of like looking back through this history, and things were actually surprisingly good. And then I went and I looked at sort of like, you know, say articles on BDSM, and it's like, oh, you know, someone dies of asphyxiation in a dungeon in New York, and or dominatrix taken into court. Or if you look at the swinging stuff, it's like a swing club faces licensing issues because they're in the suburbs and so on and so forth. And it's like all the BDSM and swing articles sort of had this overtone. They were all articles not saying, well, okay, all the poly articles were, hey, some people are doing this poly thing, it's interesting. With the sort of subtext of, maybe you are interested in reading this about this poly thing because you might be interested in it too, which is great, you know, we're, you know, actually getting some exposure out there. But in the case of swinging and BDSM, it was, oh, there are these other people out there who are doing these sort of bad things, swinging and BDSM, and they're getting arrested for it, or people are dying, or someone's getting blackmailed, or like all this other stuff. And it was actually just really interesting to see the contrast there. And I think some of that, I think there's a number of reasons for that, but I think some of it is because the language of polyamory has been very loving. And in our culture today, like if you want to have sex that's approved, you call it love. You know, I'm mixing up motivations. So love is its own thing. But if you want it, but like the approved sexuality is the sexuality that's cloaked in love. And the unapproved sexuality is the stuff that's just sex or whatever you want to call it. But in any case, it seems to be working.
Yeah, I mean, it has been working. Polyamory has gotten a lot of publicity that's mostly been positive, you know, although there have been some negative things, but mostly from groups that, you know, are sort of extremist, you know, anti-queer, anti anything that is not, you know, straight heterosexual, you know, monogamous sex. But it's not, I'm not sure that that's going to last, because up until now, you know, the stories that have been getting out have, as I said, just been these kind of almost family interest stories, you know, and the poly people are presented as these, you know, they're families, they're a little different from us, but they're still families. You know, and there isn't much attention paid to the fact that, well, you know, yes, that's true. That's a part of the polyamory community. But there are a lot of people out there who are kind of having, you know, what you might call sport sex, you know, where that's just, it's not just about building a family. It's about having fun. And so there is, I think, a potential for some serious backlash. And I think that, you know, to some degree, it's possible it will be exacerbated by the connection between polyamory and technology. This is a real website. I wish I had made it up, but it's not. I didn't. For a long time, there has been a link in popular culture between technology and things that are kind of, you know, wacky, non-traditional. I mean, I actually see this in particular in California. I, for quite a number of years, lived in the Central Valley, and I met lots of people who moved from LA or the Bay Area to the Central Valley because they wanted to get away from the culture of the Bay Area or of LA or, you know, whatever coastal region. And often, if I talked to them at any length, it would have to do with they wanted to get away from the gay people, and they wanted to get away from the people of other races, and they wanted to get away from, you know, whoever they wanted to get away from. But then they also connected that in their head to the technology, and they were very resistant to technology as well. And there is, you know, sort of this ongoing connection of technology, you know, and in popular culture, of technology and sort of various other non-traditional kinds of things. And so, you know, it's possible that if any kind of negative feeling towards polyamory erupts or even percolates upwards, the involvement with technology is going to become sort of another thing that is scary and threatening about people involved with polyamory. It's like, oh, well, you know, look at these people, they can't conduct real relationships anyway. That's why they're online all the time, you know. It's, you know, it's like, you know, they say going online all the time disrupts our social fiber, you know, it disrupts our real social relationships. This is one of the ongoing anxieties about the internet generally. I mean, and this is still a big anxiety, that spending your time connecting with people online is going to destroy all of your real life relationships. And very easily, polyamory and the growth of polyamory or the growing visibility of polyamory could be seen as evidence for this, that if people focused on having normal relationships with those right around them, they wouldn't, you know, or if they weren't online all the time, they wouldn't have been sucked into this polyamory. You know. I know. Well, you know, it's kind of funny, but, you know, I mean, I've known people who practice polyamory have been accused of being sex addicts. They've been accused of all kinds of sort of deviant practices. And the kinds of language that is used in these kinds of accusations, you know, it's not that different than accusations about being addicted to the internet or addicted to online gaming or, you know, other kinds of anxiety-producing practices.
And just to add to that a little bit, I mean, I think we already sort of have the precursors to that. Right now, there's a sort of what I'm going to call the child and the internet panic. It's like, don't let your teenage daughters, you know, access the internet because some guy will pick them up and, you know, terrible things will happen. And actually, if you look at the number of cases that have happened of that, it's actually minuscule. Like, this is really not a danger. Like, if you're worried about that, you really shouldn't be crossing the street. But there's sort of the potential for that sort of association. You know, don't let your kids go online; they'll catch the queer or the poly. Yeah, really, yeah, this could happen. So you know, we're a little concerned about this.
Well, I mean, and I see this. I mean, I'm a professor, and I teach some of the classes I teach are to graduate students who are future teachers, and they are some of them very anxious about the internet generally, and they. Or if they aren't, they deal with parents who are very anxious about the internet generally. And they're mostly anxious, you know, in a larger sense because they feel like the internet is beyond their control. You know, if their kids are online, they're doing stuff that their parents can't control, their parents can't supervise. And I think in general, when people are online, they are perceived as being in a space where they can do things that no one can supervise. And, you know, that has always caused anxiety, whether it's in an online space or, you know, out in the backwoods behind the school. So, you know, this is something that, you know, right now it's still sort of on the horizon, but we're starting, you know, this anxiety exists around other issues on the internet. It exists around technology generally. And it, I think, probably will, you know, we will face resistance on that in the poly community, you know, as we get more exposure, as it becomes better known, there is going to be, I think, some pretty serious resistance. And, you know, this will sort of become another reason for, you know, not having internet access in the schools, or another reason why, you know, people will have to police what they do online, you know, if you're a teacher or someone who works with kids or something like that. At the same time, there are growing poly connections. Was this your slide or mine?
It's nominally mine.
Okay.
We kind of already talked about this a bit. Like, you know, the internet brings people together. And some of the people it's bringing together are apparently poly. And this is important, not just, I think we kind of focused on the dating and finding partners, but also sort of finding a friend group. One thing that people don't really think about, if you're outside the poly community, you say, oh, poly people just need to find poly people. Well, no, actually, poly people need to find poly people who are also sci-fi geeks like them, or whatever it happens to be, because otherwise you don't really get along with them too well, and you're like, well, maybe I should just be monogamous and date people I can find, or what have you. So the internet brings people together. And what we're seeing a lot of is people sort of developing poly family. And that can mean a lot of different things. It can mean sort of like your local poly community. It can mean a close group of poly friends. It could actually mean extended poly networks. Like, you can start with the people I'm dating, and then I know the people they're dating, but I don't know the people they're dating, all of them, and I really don't know what happens after that. And, you know, even if we just talk about those three levels of sort of my personal polyamory network, love life, you know, you're out of the state at level 3 and on the East Coast and in Canada and some other things. But sort of, you know, there's this very interesting and very rich sort of networking effect. And in some ways, in my case at least, I have a particular poly style. You know, the relationships end up in some ways, I don't want to say mirroring the internet, but it's interesting that words like network are really useful for it, right? And this kind of goes into our next point, which is that one of the amazing things about the polyamory movement, especially in the last 10 years, I think this was not so true before that, is the sheer speed to which techniques are developed. Techniques for poly organizing, techniques for running your poly relationships, techniques for coming out to your partner or what have you. It's actually, we build this sort of like poly conventional wisdom really quickly. And as an example of this, we have a relatively new relationship form, or newly acknowledged, I guess, that's often called monopoly. And that's a situation where a poly person is dating a monogamous person. Ooh, people are twittering. In that case, that's a very hard situation to figure out, because there's sort of a power balancing thing that happens in a poly-poly relationship that does not happen in a monopoly relationship. But someone made up the term monopoly maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, and there's already internet forums. There's like a standard set of answers that's 2 years old at this point. And it's just actually really surprising how fast this went from, oh, don't do that, to, oh, you can do that, to, oh, here's how you do that, right? And it's starting to be integrated into like the Poly guidebooks and stuff. But in some ways, I think the internet really led this one. And that's been, I think this sort of thing has been contributing to the real adaptability of polyamory. If you look at polyamory, it started out with group marriage and then moved on to sort of what we call primary, secondary, and then some, and now we're adding things like monopoly and stuff, and we're just sort of continually increasing the number of different ways you can do non-monogamy that are well understood.
Yeah, and I think that's important for poly people, obviously. But also, one thing that I'm thinking just even looking at this slide is that since all of this is happening on the internet, and most of it's happening in places where it's kind of visible to everyone, you know, that then also enriches just sort of everybody else's understanding of what it might mean to be poly. And it sort of from the beginning helps to undermine stereotypes, because when you only have a few examples of something, it's almost impossible to avoid having a stereotypical view. You've only got a couple of models, maybe one model. You know, for a while, everyone's like, polyamory's like, whoa, is it like on Big Love? It's like, well, no. it's really not what it's like on Big Love. Or, you know, there was, you know, the model of the way people were doing it on the real world in one of the most recent editions. And, you know, again, that is a very narrow vision. And, of course, those are people who were selected for the show because they behave badly. But, you know, now there are lots and lots of examples out there of how people are carrying out polyamorous relationships. And they're visible not just in the sort of poly forums and the poly community online, but in the mainstream as well. Because so for example, you know, here's a picture showing your family, some of it. And this was, I think, at least it, some of these pictures appeared on Facebook.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, something that, very interesting that's happened is we got some really good MTV exposure recently that was actually not quite as spectacular as MTV likes to make things. So that was, it was a primary secondary situation in New York City and a triad in North Carolina, both queer. Yeah. So it's really sort of percolating.
But yeah, so it's getting out into the mainstream in a variety of ways, showing that, you know, that like this is not just about swingers, and it's not also just not about, you know, sort of the, I don't know, the loving family going to church, but there are all these different variations of just people who are trying to live their lives in different ways.
I just like the title of the slide. We're taking over the world. Right. Yeah, no, I'm going to start with this picture. And again, we screwed up the website. That's www.photographerari.com, who is my partner, who's in the audience, her other boyfriend. This is one of the advantages of being poly, actually. You have a strong resource base to pull on of people who are you are dating or who are dating other people. They like give you photos for presentations and stuff. Anyways, this is the polyamory contingent in San Francisco Pride this year. It's the sixth year that we've been in there. I guess this is another really good example of the internet and real life sort of mixing a lot. This banner, a picture of this banner from about 4 years ago, is on the Wikipedia page for polyamory if you go look it up. So, you know, it's like, oh, look, it's my friends on Wikipedia. So it's like, you know, polyamory sort of really gets organized on the internet, and then we have, you know, contingents in street parades, and then but then the pictures of that go back on the internet, and so on and so forth. But yeah, as the, there's a certain sort of cohesiveness, well, oh, okay, there's a lot of fuzziness at the edges of polyamory, but the word itself has acquired a certain sort of identity cohesiveness, arguably very fast. Like, if we compare it to, for example, to, like, the creation of homosexuality, that took a good, like, 60 years. If you go back and look at the creation of queer, well, not queer identity, but the creation of homosexual identity, queer identity was much faster. And so there's a sort of again, steamroller effect, where things get out, information builds up, people hear about it, and then as a result, things get out more. And you know, you suddenly things are appearing, and you're like, where did this come from? Here it is, right?
Yeah, there's really sort of a cascade effect where, you know, once things get out online, it's pretty impossible to recall them, you know, for good or ill. And but now that there is sort of an online polyamorous presence and there is this notion of a polyamorous community, even when resistance comes, that will then probably, to some degree, harden the community against the resistance. You know, if people start to feel like they're really being pushed because they're polyamorous, you know, then they may become more politically active. They might decide that I'm really going to come out to make a statement, you know, even if it's, you know, personally not so convenient for me. And they will use technology to deal with that as well. I mean, so far, the technology has mostly served to help people deal with things in their relationships. You know, talking to their partners about this or that, maybe talking to a parent or a child. But if we start to encounter real political resistance and people really have to start organizing in order to defend their rights to live the way they want to live, then technology will be essential for that. I mean, certainly we've seen, looking at many other movements, how technology can facilitate political organizing and empowering different groups of people. And I think we're done, ready for questions.
Click to, oh, it's Apple, oh my. Good. Okay, so I guess there are, I'm pretty certain there have to be a couple of questions here, because there was an ongoing controversy, but some people were mentioning on Twitter, like, oh my, these poly guys, I mean, they should go, like, you know, Google Calendar, and that's it, and stuff. And so it's, so some people think so, like this, oh, like, polyamory internet, that's 101. I mean, what's happening here? So I'm not sure if anyone actually wants to speak up about the whole thing, but anyone here?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, okay, good.
Yeah, 101 stuff is cool for people who have never been online, but I think most of the people in this room are a little beyond that. So I wanted to ask you about one thing that's a challenging issue in a lot of poly relationships is communications among various people's partners, and especially communications around sexual health and safety, as well as other things like various kinds of commitments people might have in relationships. And of course, the best way to deal with that is just talk to them. But aside from that, do you have any tools you could recommend that might be especially useful for poly people to share important communications among partners' partners?
Well, let me clarify a little bit first. When you say to help them share, do you mean just purely from a sort of a logistical point, or do you mean how do we deal with the fact that this might be awkward?
Both.
Okay.
Both. I repeat, both.
Well, I would say that, you know, purely from the logistical standpoint, you know, lots of people do things just, you know, with group emails or by sharing the Google calendars, for example. If people are, I mean, certainly from my own experience, sharing the calendars, people sort of, they put up possible things with question marks. And then, you know, they all get up there and we look and say, oh, you know, this is overlapping with that. And what do we need to do about this? And, you know, and one thing about those kinds of tools, you know, if there's ever any question about, you know, who's getting to spend more time or who's getting to do something more often, you can look and you can see, you know, especially if you color code it, it becomes very clear if there is, in fact, some kind of imbalance that needs to be addressed. But I would say also online, and this is something I've seen at one of your blogs at least, that people will put up, you know, sample messages that you can send. Like, if you have to break a date, if you want to break a date with one of your girlfriends or boyfriends in order to see one of the other ones, here's how you might phrase it in order to avoid hurt feelings as much as possible. I mean, so there are things like that, which are actually really helpful, because for most people who are in poly situations, you don't know what the hell you're doing, at least initially. You know, even if you know the individual people involved pretty well, still, it's like, what is the etiquette? You know, what kinds of things, you know, is it okay? You know, for what kinds of reasons might it be okay to break a date or something like that?
I mean, I really like because I have a GPS system now, and I really like it. I could go nowhere without my GPS. So my GPS is like, if it's broken, if it would be broken, I would die somewhere out there. Okay, out there. And I like this, like, I mean, you're referring to it a little bit. So you have... Let's say a GPS system, but for relationships. So, but it would be kind of bad if like it's not working and then your whole love life falls apart because you can't handle it anymore because you need some social networking sites to actually handle your love life. Like, I'm depending on my GPS system. But I don't know.
I do want to, as a poly person who has, you know, tried to figure out polyamory both pre and post Google Calendar.
Okay.
I can say, oh my God, it's a whole different world. I can't say Google Calendar saved my relationship, but it's not, you know, it's like two notches down below that.
So I'm right?
Well, Kim's right. Google Calendar is very important.
Okay.
Yeah, I would like to ask you, but because of course what you do is also a matter of privacy, I would say, because... maybe you can be really open, but there could be people that just want to be open only with the poly people and not with the rest of the people. So my question is, did you do, do you reflect before using Google, Facebook and all these platforms that are actually open, but not so much in the sense that are still controlled by a corporation? I mean, do you feel comfortable to use them? Or maybe could be better to use something that is not actually sucking all your data because you are giving your private data there. Or maybe you are also doing a kind of critical prospecting and playing with identity, or maybe not putting your own data. And are there people that are trying also to criticize the social network themselves in this kind of group?
You want to answer? Well, I mean, certainly this is something that, I mean, with any relationship, I would say not just a poly relationship, you know, you have to be in agreement with your partners about what kind of information it's okay to share online publicly. You know, I don't, you know, I have stuff, for example, on, there are things that I put on Facebook that I don't put elsewhere. There are things that I put elsewhere that I don't put on Facebook. And not just to do with poly stuff, but, you know, like relating to my kids, for example. I mean, even if I were, you know, completely monogamous and living a very traditional life, there's still information that I would not share online. In terms of the commercial sites, I mean, there are places where, and it may be that I haven't gone through every single issue as carefully as I should, but I sort of feel like, you know, I don't want to completely hide this, and I don't want to keep it completely off the commercial sites that are sucking my data, because I want poly to be visible, even if I don't necessarily, you know, I mean, I don't feel totally comfortable with being totally out because of where I live and, you know, what my family situation is, but I would like to be comfortable with it, and I would ultimately prefer to be completely out. Not all my partners would, and so, you know, I don't use their names, I don't use their pictures. You know, I didn't put them in this presentation.
Okay, here is a question by SF Slim on Twitter, who actually gave me his iPhone, okay? Please read it aloud. Or actually, I'm not sure, maybe it's more like a comment, okay?
The question, this is not a question so much as
a
statement.
More like, yeah.
Remember, Internet Poly 101, while perhaps remedial for this crowd, is akin to most users, to a user's manual for a Mars lander.
To most.
Okay, so I guess this is someone who is appreciating Internet Poly 101. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a little, we're in this strange situation, actually, where, you know, if most poly people we know could have put together this presentation, which is an interesting thing. You know, we've all gotten so used to like using Google Calendar or what have you, that we're like, oh yeah, Google Calendar, of course. Like, you know, if I didn't have Google Calendar, this partner of mine would be really upset whenever I tried to schedule a date with this partner, and I end up in this terrible three-way negotiation. So yeah, it's just talking to different levels.
Okay, yeah, okay. Please come closer.
I just wanted to make a comment because I'm from the East Coast, and when poly people get together online, it's usually through meetup.com. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's on this end, but it's pretty huge on the East Coast. Also, Reed Mihalko does a lot of online tutoring when it comes to poly, on forums and free talks that are like 1 hour long, how to deal with the jealousy issues specifically about poly. So that's another way that the internet is being used.
Okay. Yeah, I would comment that there are a number of podcasts that come out weekly or biweekly or something like that that have to do with poly specifically or with poly among a lot of other issues. So for example, Cunning Minx does Poly Weekly and Dan Savage is a more general sex advice columnist, but he's often talking about poly issues. Information is getting out there through those channels as well. This is, of course, the challenge. It's like we sort of skim the surface. There you could certainly focus in on any one of these channels for deeper exploration.
And I think I can add that I'm fairly certain that people are using the internet to facilitate polyamory in ways that we don't really know about.
I have a question. I was curious what you know about poly culture before the internet and maybe what we might learn from studying it.
Well, in retrospect, I knew a fair amount of polyculture before the internet. I had read about it quite often, and I had a pretty clear notion of some of the possibilities. But what I didn't know before the internet is that there were lots and lots of people actually doing it. When I read about it previously, in a magazine or in a book or something like that, it seemed as though it was an incredibly small number of people, that it was a tiny exception. And it had never occurred to me however inclined toward I might have felt, it never occurred to me that I could actually do it. I didn't know that any people actually did it, even though, I spent quite a bit of time living in areas that were, quite liberal and, very friendly towards, towards queer people and towards alternative sexualities generally. Still, the people that I heard of who were practicing poly was it seemed to be a very small number, and they seemed to, it always seemed to be very connected to some very specific spiritual belief system or something like that. It never seemed as though they were just kind of like regular people doing poly. When I started to find it online, it became clear that, actually there were lots and lots of people doing it all different ways, all different kinds of people, and it was very possible.
I mean, it's quite interesting that, for example, Heinlein, the science fiction author, Heinlein was a fucking conservative guy. I mean, he wrote Starship Troopers. Fuck hell, okay? But he was a poly. In the 50s. Yeah. It's interesting. So that, that would be my question here. Because of all these new internet forums and all that stuff, are there more and more people who actually you would consider conservative, going into a direction that's more like a polyamorous kind of thing?
I can say I'm pretty sure we can say that it's actually always been a mix. Mm-hmm. To add something to the earlier question, it's hard to actually distinguish between the beginning of polyamory and the beginning of polyamory on the internet, because one of the first things that happened was alt.polyamory in 1992, and the word was created in 1990. So there was sort of a previous era in the 80s, and actually you can sort of trace it all the way back to the free love movement. And then I had a point for you, and I forgot it.
Something about conservatives and...
Oh, right, and... actually, if you, read some of the stuff from the mid-80s, it actually has sort of it's all polyfidelity and group marriage, and it has kind of a conservative air. It's like, oh, we're just trying to, actually, these were pretty liberal people, but there's always been this sort of ability to be, I think, conservative and poly. I don't think it's been increasing significantly, I think you could do it in 1994 and you can do it now. And it's maybe about the same number of people in the community, a minority of the community, but yeah.
Okay, so maybe one last question and then we have to go on to hear Carl's talk, okay? Or is there actually... Oh yes, okay, of course.
What's the, I mean, somebody brought up a very good point here about, you know, the conservative folks. Obviously, they're not going to be prominently on the internet, right? That's just, they're going to try and keep it on the down low. Are there resources on the internet that seem to be specifically targeted to those folks who are trying to just keep it completely hidden, but and they have private, there's private networks or other things that they're using? Or,
well, I think I mean, certainly the internet can facilitate sort of private discussion of these things, obviously, but one of the characteristics of poly as it is generally practiced now is that people try to be as open as possible. I mean, obviously, with their partners, one of the things that distinguishes polyamory from people having affairs is that everyone knows what's happening. So I think that in general, in the poly community, people lean towards openness. If you want to, all
right. Well, I was more aiming at where there's actually groups of somebody's formed a household or whatever, and they're just keeping it completely on the down low from all of their friends and relatives and all the rest of that. And are there resources or to your knowledge? I mean, obviously this is an area that you guys are well aware of. Are there some sort of private networks or non-commercial networks that those folks are using? Or
I think they actually end up using sort of the other poly resources. You can be anonymous on the internet, and often people are. I see a lot of like people creating new live journal addresses specifically to ask a question, or using, you know, Yahoo emails or what have you. So I think people in those cases who are looking for resources tend to come to the people who are, well, or tend to come to the open forums, just do it in an anonymous manner. There's this interesting question with the poly community that's very similar to the queer community. It's like, if there's a person who's closeted and doesn't necessarily identify that way and never went to a meeting, are they queer? And similarly, if there's figured out an arrangement with, you know, their partner and their other partner or what have you, and they were like, well, this is just what we do. I don't know what to call it. I don't care. I don't need a community. Who are you? Blah, blah, blah. Are they actually poly? I'm not sure. So there's kind of a gray area there.
Yeah, so you're basically drawing the word escapes me for now, but you're basically drawing a parallel between the term poly and being political about it, about that lifestyle. Is that what you're...
Not political, but identified, I would say.
I would just add that in the swinging world, there's a lot of conservative people. There's a lot of conservative swinging meetups that happen a lot in the South and in rural areas. And there is a trace, it would be worth investigating, mm-hmm. but there are people who swing regularly with particular couples, and those mm-hmm. are relationships that, depending on how you define it, I definitely am aware of those. So mm-hmm. it's something that may be an area where that's either exists and or where it's growing. So.
Okay, I think we have to stop. We have to go on. A big applause for Kim and Peppermint. So, just a short break. Kyle Michulis is on its way. On its way, of course. Its way, yeah.
I'm gender.
Yeah, he lost its gender. No. Good. So, Kyle Michulis, biometrics in the bedroom. Right on in like 2 or 3 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, do we have like a DVI to VGA connector here? Like some Apple folks here or something? Like the adapter thingy. No one is listening. Okay.
Okay. Let me see if I can.